And I start with my favorite one, very, very simply. Are there charitable organizations that you and your family support or causes that are important to you? Ask the question, stop talking, and just listen and see what happens. I guarantee you, whether or not this client is philanthropic themselves, you will learn something new about them. In cases where they are givers and it's important to them, the relationship always, that's an important word to use, but always deepens. It's unbelievable. I've seen this. I've taken part in these conversations. I've seen relationships deepen right in front of my eyes.
Welcome to the Future Ready Advisor Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Sivarajan, wealth management consultant and behavioral scientist. Join me and my guests, from industry experts to top advisors, as we explore the pain points that financial advisors face, how they can solve them, free up their time, and make their practice future ready. Hi, everyone. I'm Sam Sivarajan. Welcome to today's episode of the Future Ready Advisor. Today, I'm here with Mike Todd, a veteran of the financial services industry and a champion for integrating philanthropic giving into wealth management practices. Mike, welcome to the show.
Sam, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Delighted. I'm looking forward to our conversation. Let me quickly introduce you to our audience. Mike is the principal and philanthropic strategist with Transform Philanthropy, where he works with charities and advisors to understand the opportunities in today's charitable giving space. He is also the philanthropy and social impact strategist with the Sages Collective, where he consults with corporate clients who want to give back to their communities, be that through charitable giving, employee matching, or some other form of social investment. Previously, Mike has worked with some of the largest donor-advised funds organizations in Canada, as well as financial advisor practices to deliver on his vision of philanthropic giving. Mike, delighted to have you here. Would love for you to share with us a little bit about your journey and your business philosophy.
My journey, because I love the journey. I love the story. I love talking about it, but I'll try to give you the short version because it can tend to run long. I started my career in the financial services business. As a teenager, I loved the stock market. I paid attention to it. So I joined Templeton back in the day and was a customer service rep because that's how you got into the business. So I was there for 2 years. I moved to Fidelity where I spent 10 years and moved up through the ranks. Loved working there, just a phenomenal organization, loved the people I was with. But I got to the point where I started to wonder, is this it? And I described myself then as being restless. I had friends who said to me, it's a midlife crisis. And I said to them, if it is, I highly recommend it. But I left. I negotiated my exit and I left and started to explore. And I had a very strong sense that the next stop was going to be with a charity. And so I went to work with World Vision, and this is back when I was still in the Toronto area. I spent a year there, and then I moved out here to where I live now in Vancouver and spent almost a decade with a very small charity doing real grassroots work in the downtown east side. The next part of the journey, to keep it short, it was I had a major life change. My marriage ended, and so I moved to China because, I mean, what else do you do when your marriage ends? So I always wanted to see it, and I went to see it and had no idea what that was going to look like, how long that would be. And I ended up staying for 2 years and just loved every minute of it. I came back to Vancouver, wondered what was next, and then came across a role with the Raymond James Canada Foundation as their executive director. And I thought, this is kind of interesting because I still love that business. But my heart's in philanthropy. At this point, I knew that. That's what I really wanted to work in. And here was an opportunity to blend those two things. And that really had not occurred to me before. So I came back and I got the role. And I realized that I had stumbled across my purpose, or if you want to call it the calling or the thing I was here to do. I love philanthropy, love the financial services business. So here was an opportunity to meld those two things, as I said. My own personal vision statement or mission statement, I was never quite sure which is which, but mine is to spread the magic of generosity. And that's a very broad statement, which I see as a good thing, because that allows me to do many, many different things and still be able to say that I'm being true to my purpose to spread the magic of generosity. So I found myself at this intersection of wealth management and philanthropy, as I like to say. For me, the litmus test is and is always, can I still tick the box on my purpose statement? And if the answer is yes, then this is something I want to dive into. And as I say, it's a perfect opportunity to blend the two things that I really love.
Awesome. And I think this is a very timely topic. I think that we are, as the population is aging, as the clients in the wealth management industry are aging, I think philanthropy and preparing for charitable giving and giving back, I think, becomes a bigger and bigger theme for many clients, certainly the ones that I've dealt with in the past. And it's been my experience that almost every wealth management client, particularly the high net worth and the ultra high net worth, have a cause that is near and dear to their heart. My question to you is, how can financial advisors proactively initiate conversations with clients about their philanthropic interests and causes? And what benefits do you see that this brings to the client-advisor relationship?
Great. Yeah, it's a great question. Let me start by acknowledging something that I found and respect and understand. And that is that this topic scares a lot of financial advisors, because they're not used to it. They've never done it before. They worry about it being too personal, too emotional. So I acknowledge that right up front. I think we need to see that and say, yes, it's true, and then move through it, because there really is some huge benefits to this that we can talk about. As an advisor, if you're philanthropic yourself, or even if you don't think you really are all that much charitable, if you buy into the idea that the wealth management business is moving, and quite frankly, has moved into a much more holistic sphere, then I think you cannot ignore this topic. Don't leave it to chance. That's the first thing I say. Be intentional and make it part of your process. That sounds like great advice, but like, how do you do that? The reality is there's some great research out there, most of it from the US, but it's still applicable, that shows that advisors are sitting on one side of the desk thinking that they've given permission to their client to talk about philanthropy, or even thinking that they've asked the question and not getting anything in response. So therefore saying, okay, well, my client's not interested, I'm not going to bother with that. The same research shows that the client is sitting on the other side of the desk thinking, why isn't this guy asking me about this? This is really important to me. Why do I always have to bring it up? It's a really interesting study, and we could talk a lot about that. But just acknowledging that there's this disconnect between the two parties often, and both parties saying, oh, they didn't ask, so they must not be interested. It's really, really interesting. So just start. And what I like to talk about is the philanthropic conversation. I put it in capital letters. It sounds kind of spooky, but really all it is a list of questions to ask your client. And I start with my favorite one, very, very simply. Are there charitable organizations that you and your family support, or causes that are important to you? Ask the question, stop talking, and just listen and see what happens. I guarantee you, whether or not this client is philanthropic themselves, you will learn something new about them. In cases where they are givers and it's important to them, the relationship always, that's an important word to use, but always deepens. It's unbelievable. I've seen this. I've taken part in these conversations. I've seen relationships deepen right in front of my eyes. So it's very, very important. When I run into advisors who are hesitant, or they like to challenge me on it and think, no, my clients, they're not interested, I ask them if they, okay, fine. But do you know of clients of yours who in the social settings, on the golf course, whatever the case is, you've understood that, yeah, they've got some causes that are important to them? And usually they say yes, because as you said, most of the high net worth and ultra high net worths, in fact, do have causes that are important to them. And I'll ask that advisor, okay, great. So you picture that client. When they talk about their giving, what happens? And usually I get a blank look back and I say, well, what's the client like? And they say, well, they get excited about it. It's, you know, they like it. It's they want to tell me about it. And so I'll say to them, so you, let me get this straight. You are their wealth advisor. Yeah. This is very, very important to them. Yes. Can we say that their charitable giving is in fact part of their wealth? And then, you know, it starts to dawn on them where I'm heading, and they go, yeah. And you know, depending on the resistance I get, I can be quite forward about this. And I'll just say, listen, you're their wealth advisor, and you're telling me you're not helping them with something that is clearly an important part of their wealth. How does that work? And you know, that I'll do that when I need to, but I think it's a poignant example, and everybody can think of somebody where that applies. There's research out there, more research, this time from Fidelity, where they say at a firm level, first of all, at the firm level, companies that offer some kind of charitable advice have more assets and they have higher growth, both organic and new money, because givers love to talk to other givers. At the advisor level, those who do it have a larger share of wallet and are rated higher on issues of trust. They are considered exemplary in looking at their clients' unique needs. Unique is a strong word in our business. And they are also considered a multi-generational resource, which again is a timely topic.
No, I think everything that you say resonates, Mike. I think in my own experience, I'll give a counterexample, is like when you deal with business owners, for example, I've seen that asking the business owner questions about their business and then shutting up, that conversation could be 20 minutes or an hour long, just there, the answer that they give. It's clear that it is very core to their identity, that they want to talk about it, that they're delighted to talk about it, that they value being asked about it. And to that extent, I've seen the exact same thing that you've seen. To ask a client, what causes do they care about? What resonates to them or to their family or to their loved ones? And invariably, there's something. But I think the key is exactly what you said, is to frame the question and shut up. And I think there is too much of a temptation, as you say, that, you know, that because I asked the question and they didn't immediately have an answer, well, I've asked it and they're not interested. I think the challenge for the advisor, or for the advisor of the future, is to be smart about how they ask that question, ask it a number of different ways at a number of different times, and allow the silence to not be a threat to them or to the client. Let the silence hang and ask, and let the client answer. And then before moving on, be ready to probe a little further. Why is that important to you? What is the relevance? How did you get involved with this cause, and what does it mean to you or your family?
Yep, that's fantastic. I love that that list of questions. As I said, the philanthropic conversation can go on and on. I love the idea of just letting the silence sit for a minute and let them speak. And then you can take it any different direction that they allow you to. So it's a fantastic conversation to have.
And to your point, I think it deepens that relationship, whether there is an immediate wealth solution that the advisor can provide or not, is almost secondary. I think the idea that you've actually, you know, built this deeper bond with that client is good for the relationship and good for the long-term business that the advisor is looking to build.
Absolutely.
I would love, Mike, if you could share a few examples of financial advisors that you've seen who have successfully helped their clients establish family legacy giving programs or other examples like that, and how this has strengthened the bond between advisors and their clients across generations, as you mentioned.
Yeah, fantastic. I have so many examples, so you're going to need to stop me at some point, but I'll try to anonymize them, but get the point across. And most of them are going to center around the use of a donor advised fund. only because that's primarily the tool that advisors will use, at least in starting out on this journey with their clients in philanthropy. So be prepared to hear the word donor advised funder, DAF. My first example that I think of is a situation where I was involved in a conversation. A client established a donor advised fund, and he named his son as the successor. And this is simply the person who will take over the advisory duties when the original donor is no longer able to. So quite often, or almost every donor advised fund will ask for a successor to be named. So the advisor facilitated a meeting. I attended, and it gave them time, father and son, with advisor facilitating and me sitting in the corner just listening for most of the conversation, gave them time to talk. It gave them time for the father to pass on the reasons for his interest in this particular cause to his son. And the son was already familiar with it, but it was a really heartfelt conversation and why this was so important to the father. And it really came across to the son. It was an opportunity to get the son interested and involved, not only with the donor advised fund, but to go deeper himself with the cause. It was really a privilege, quite frankly, to be a part of that conversation. And we don't even need to talk about the fact that now the advisor is in a relationship with the son as well. I recall the opposite situation. And this happens more often than you might think, where mom and dad had established years ago a private foundation. They had a cause that was very specific and very, very important to them. The intention was that down the road, the two kids would take over the management of the foundation when mom and dad had ceased doing that. But they had already come to the realization that the kids were uninterested and disengaged whenever they got to talking about the work of the foundation. So another conversation facilitated and another opportunity for me to sit in and listen and perhaps make suggestions here and there. What became very, very clear, and I think we all knew it going in, but we forced the issue, was that the parents' cause was not the children's cause or causes. They, in fact, had very different causes themselves, and they were miles away from where the parents were. This was a revelation to the parents, and it was a really, really good conversation. Now, kudos to the parents for accepting that their cause was not their kids, and for recognizing that the important thing was that the kids have their own causes to support. And I've seen cases where that's gone bad, where the parents just dig in, nope, this is why we do this, and you have to get on board. And that never ends well, quite honestly. The end result here was we opened up two donor advised fund accounts, one for each child. The parents transferred a decent amount of assets into each, and the kids started doing their own thing in their areas of concern. Long term, the plan is that when the parents cease operating their foundation, the rest of the assets will be split. It'll go to these two donor advised funds, and the kids will carry on the family's philanthropic tradition, but just in a different way. It's a beautiful solution to what could be a real problem.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful example, and the importance that you highlighted that it's a platform to have a deeper conversation. I remember once working with this ultra high net worth family where there were four adult children, and two were in the family business and two weren't. But the parents had decided to set up a family trust to give back to worthy causes. And the way that they had set it up was that the four kids ran the trust. They decided who and what causes to give to and so on. So, but what this family trust accomplished for this family is that besides giving to worthwhile causes, the parents had found a way to keep all their kids engaged, those in the business and those not in the business. They ensured that they had a relationship, the four siblings had a relationship, that they continued to work together, and that they were living the family's values in the next generation as well, which again reminded me very much of the example that you just shared.
That's fantastic. I love that. I've seen cases where children have been involved either in managing the donor advice fund or managing the foundation as not only, but as preparation for becoming involved in the family business. But I love your example of the two kids who are in and the two kids who are not in the business, and yet this kept them together. I think that's fantastic. I've got, let me give you one last example, only because I think this is a much broader based situation and allows much more people, many more people to get involved. And that is cases I've seen where parents have used their giving as an opportunity to provide children with a charitable allowance. And this happens most often. It's facilitated by a platform-based donor advice fund, like a Charitable Impact or a GiveWise Foundation. There's a few of them out there. And so literally, the parents put assets into the donor advice fund. And on a monthly basis, I'm thinking of two cases in particular, on a monthly basis, they transfer $25, $50 into the kids' donor advice fund account. And when I say kids, I mean 7 years old, 8 years old, 10 years old. And then the really cool part is they sit around the kitchen table once a month and they have what I like to call a board meeting. And they talk about what the kids have heard on the news, perhaps what they're hearing in school. And then they choose where the children are going to send the money off to. And I think it's a fantastic way of trying to instill the precepts of philanthropy in children at an early age, because quite honestly, if we're not taught, it's not going to come naturally to us.
I think that's a brilliant example of families actually living their values and showcasing to their kids values from a very early age. Because I think this is, you know, virtue is, I think C.S. Lewis said that virtue is taught, is taught, not caught, right? So that you have to actually live your life in the way that you want your kids to live it, and not just, you know, give the edicts or the rulings from on high. You mentioned a few times donor advised funds. Can you talk a little bit, you know, for listeners that might not have the familiarity with it, can you talk about the donor advised fund structure and how advisors and they can use it with their clients to advance the charitable causes that they care about?
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. I should have done that. The first thing to point out is that a donor advised fund in Canada is not the same as a donor advised fund in the U.S. And if you watch the U.S. press or read it, you're going to see a lot of negative conversations around a donor advised fund. It's fundamentally a different beast. And unfortunately, as my friend Keith Shogren at Investor Economics likes to say, the chatter in Canada about donor advised funds has an American accent. So disregard the American news and recognize that these are very, very different here. It's really a notional account held by a registered foundation, usually a public foundation, where the donor makes a donation of assets or cash to the foundation, gets their tax receipt, as you normally would when donating to a charity, and then the foundation holds those assets, and the donor can provide advice or suggestions, that's where the name comes from, to the foundation as to where they would like to see those funds ultimately sent. And that can happen immediately. It can happen over time. It can happen over decades, really, if you want. So it's people like to say it's like having your own private foundation, but without the administrative hassle and the costs. Donor advised, not donor instructed. So as far as CRA is concerned, it's no longer the donor's assets. And that's why these are advice and suggestions, not instructions. But those foundations that offer donor advised funds across the board will honor the donor's wishes as long as it's a registered charity in good standing with CRA.
And I think there's, in most communities across Canada, I think there is these foundations, right? There's the Vancouver Community Foundation, the Toronto Community Foundation, others, I'm sure that you can name a few, but for advisors or listeners, other resources you can point them to in this area?
Sure. And that's true. The Donor Advice Fund was really born out of the community foundation community, if you will. That's where they started. In Canada, it was in the 50s. It's now morphed into their wealth management firms with their own foundations. I gave the example of Raymond James, who offer their own branded donor advice funds, and there are independents as well. So there's a huge resource out there. The ones I mentioned about being platform-based, Charitable Impact, GiveWise, you could take a look on the internet and just get a sense of what they're all about. And I would strongly recommend, if you're interested, to speak to your advisor. They may have their own favorites already, and you could go from there.
Awesome. So we've seen over the last few years, interest rates and everything else notwithstanding, that there's been a rising interest in impact investing and what I would call ESG considerations, the environmental, social, and governance. So there's a more awareness, I think, in the both in the financial advisor community and the client community about these issues and about wanting to give back. How do you think advisors can help their clients align their philanthropic goals with their investment strategies for long-term success?
Yeah, that's great. Let me start my answer with a confession. And that is 25 or 30 years ago, when I was a much younger man with Fidelity Investments, on occasion, I mean, this was not that long ago, but on occasion, and only rarely, would the question come up, well, you know, I'm a little worried about owning guns, owning tobacco, whatever kind of stocks are in the portfolio. Should I be concerned about that? And I have to confess, back then, I would have given what was then the standard answer, which was, listen, my view is you should invest for maximum return. Don't worry about what's in the portfolio, and then you'll have more money to give away. And I'm embarrassed to say it, but that's what I've told people. Times have changed, as you said. I mean, there's a huge interest in impact investing, ESG, responsible investing. There's a million names. It's become mainstream. And I should add, we've quickly done away with the mistaken idea that in order to invest responsibly, you have to forego return. It's simply not true. The numbers prove it. It's equitable. But now there are opportunities to, as you alluded to, aligning values with finances. And so there are opportunities both in their personal investment accounts, but also in the investment portion of a donor advised fund, for example, or the investments of the family foundation to invest in impact funds. Lots of them out there. So as an example, if I'm concerned about climate change and I regularly give to the David Suzuki Foundation, to the Nature's Trust of British Columbia, that's great. But now I can also take the invested assets that I'm holding in the donor advised fund for a longer term and put that into an impact fund, a climate fund, some kind of I could issue a loan to a startup that is working on technology in the area of climate. And so not only am I granting to the cause that's important to me, I'm actually investing in it as I wait to do the grants. And it's a great way to align those interests and values.
And are you seeing more of that, Mike, happening?
I'll give you the honest answer there. I'm seeing more and more clients and donors asking, and I'm seeing advisors still not clear how to respond to that, and not clear even how impact investing would fit into their business, into their books. And so there's opportunities on both fronts with clients and with advisors to have conversations about it. But it's absolutely growing, and it's absolutely not going away.
Despite any kind of volatility in the market or recessionary pressures, you think this is a long-term change in the market that we're not going to back away from?
I really do. I think this is one being driven by the client and their insistence, their growing insistence that they be able to align their values, as I said, with their investments and with their giving, and considering it all one pot, as opposed to my 30-year-old answer and keeping them extremely separate.
This has been great, Mike. We're coming to the end of our podcast, so I have a few final questions for you, rapid-fire format that I ask all of my guests. So if you're ready, number one, professionally, what is the most important lesson you've learned over the years?
I tend to the procrastination side of the ledger. So my lesson is just start. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, as the old saying says.
I love it. Good advice. It's one that I have to repeat to myself almost every day. So number two, what is one practical tip you would offer listeners keen on applying your insights?
I think that's great. That flows from the previous question. I think if you're an advisor and you're not sure how to go about this philanthropy thing, but you're intrigued, then ask the question that I read out at the philanthropic conversation. And that'll lead to the next question and the next question. And I would encourage you, and if necessary, I will dare you to ask the question of the next six clients that you meet with. And as I said earlier, you're going to learn something new and you're going to be surprised.
That's great. Last but not least, any parting words of advice for listeners?
Sure. And let me get a little more general here and talk about philanthropy in general. And that is, and I have this conversation with myself literally every day, don't get overwhelmed by the problems of the world. There are a lot of them. I can't control them. I'm not going to solve climate change. I wish I could. I'm not going to. But what I can do is find something that I care about. And as I like to say, I can lean into it and make sure that I'm working in that direction. And I think that ties in with an advisor who wants to bring philanthropy to their practice, but it ties in for all of us. Just pick a spot and work on it. And don't worry about the outcome, because as I said, it's beyond our control.
That's great and very valuable advice. Mike, this has been good, fun, and lots of interesting and actionable tips and insights. So thank you. If listeners want to learn more about you or find out about your work, where do they go?
I'm working on a website for my consulting firm, Transform Philanthropy. But quite honestly, LinkedIn is the best place to go. That's where I do most of my thinking and most of my sharing. And that's the place to find me. And please feel free to throw me a question on LinkedIn, connect. I'd be happy to, but that's the best place for me.
That's great. Mike, thank you so much for joining us today on the Future Ready Advisor. This has been great.
Sam, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
In this episode of the Future Ready Advisor, I spoke with Mike Todd, a philanthropic strategist. Here are my key takeaways. Number one, philanthropic conversations. Initiating discussions about philanthropy can deepen client-advisor relationships. Advisors should proactively inquire about their clients' charitable interests. Ask the question and simply listen. This deep engagement can develop trust and profound connections beyond wealth management. Number two, family legacy giving programs. Establishing donor-advised funds and involving family members in the management process can preserve family legacies. Mike recounts instances where familial involvement through such funds helped bridge generational divides and upheld family values. I had similar experiences in dealing with some billionaire clients. Three, aligning philanthropy with investments. The growing interest in impact investing and the ESG considerations presents an opportunity for advisors to align clients' philanthropic goals with their investment strategies. Impact funds and socially responsible investments can align clients' values with their financial portfolios. Advisors need to deal with the entirety of their clients' interests and priorities, not just investments or insurance. Engaging clients on their philanthropic goals is key to building a future-ready relationship. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Future Ready Advisor. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast. And if you could rate it while you're at it, I would appreciate it. Visit samsivarajan.com, where you can download a behavioral coaching guide and find other resources. Join me in the next episode for more tips and tools to make your practice future ready.